I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Sine. I thought we'd do this whole episode in accents. What do you reckon?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Hello there. Welcome to I Only Like You in Movies. I'm here. My name's Lonnie. I'm with Sine. How are you doing, Sine?
Hello. I'm well, thank you.
We've seen Cruella this week. And you know what, Sine? We haven't talked about this yet. On the count of three, let's both say if we liked it or not, okay?
Okay.
One, two, three.
I liked it.
Oh. Okay, cool.
Okay. Okay.
And let's see the rest of the episode talking at the same time. All right.
No.
No, what?
No.
Yep.
We're not doing this
joke. Oh, okay.
We're not doing this joke.
Okay, okay. Fair enough. I've had two jokes already, both silly. Cruella. It is obviously based on 101 Dalmatians. It's a prequel. And it's kind of in the same vein as some of the recent Disney live actions where it's like a reimagining and it's about the villain. And I think it might be one of the best ones. What do you reckon, Snake?
I mean, sure, but it's not. That's not doing this film any favours if you're putting it up against the new Lion King.
True.
You know.
Maleficent, etc. Yeah. Okay, what's it about, Sine? What could you explain the story to us all?
It's a prequel. It's Cruella's origin story, essentially. Mm-hmm. And what's the origin story? She was an orphan, and then she becomes a fashion person.
Yeah, becomes like a street urchin, and then like a, yeah.
Works in a fashion house, and then
you don't seem excited about this one, Sine. I thought you were going to be in love with it.
I have mixed feelings.
Ooh, okay. Okay, if you haven't watched it, I would recommend it. And now to spoilers.
Cool. I don't think the dramatic moments worked.
Oh, okay.
I don't think, like, when she goes to the dinner thing and she has a dress that she, like, sets on fire and is really cool and finds out that Emma Thompson killed her mother. And then they get in the car. I steal a car and Jasper and Horace are in the car. And then they drive and then they get out and she's like, she killed my mother. And then we cut to her in bed. It's like that scene screams to me of studio interference. Because if you cut that scene out and just had her going from the party to waking up in bed and saying, I need to get revenge, we know. We understand that. We're clever audience people. It screams to me of a studio going, the audience isn't quite going to get that, so we need to put a scene in there, and them going, fine, we'll refilm the scene. And blah, blah, blah. You can cut a scene out of your film and it still works without it, that means it's not necessary. And there are a few moments like that that I didn't buy the drama. I think the comedy worked really well, and the one dramatic moment that worked really well is when Emma's at the fountain towards the end and she's having a conversation to her mother who wasn't her mother. That worked. But the other things were very, like, cringy. Did you not get that?
Yeah, you're right. There was a lot more talking to a fountain than I expected. But I liked it. Yeah, that scene in particular was very good. That's the scene that goes to the Oscars, you know, nomination. I thought it was kind of nice and bit offbeat and quite dark, a lot darker than I thought it was going to be. I liked that. I thought it was very interesting in that sense. And I liked how it set up this big rivalry between, you know, one of those classic, apparently fashion designers always getting in these fights, if you believe movies, where it's all about who can make the best dress. I think most people out there are like, oh, there's a new dress out. Okay, cool. They don't really get that invested in these fights, but it seems very important to people who are a part of it. But you're saying the dramatic moments didn't work for you. I didn't mind them. I was, you know, I guess I was yeah, well, I wasn't bothered by them, so I guess they worked for me. Hmm. Were you expecting more, or what are you?
I just, my issue is that this doesn't make sense in canon.
Yeah, okay. That's another thing that might be a bit of a difference between you and me.
Yeah.
I saw at least one of the Glenn Close ones as a kid. I probably have seen the animated one as a kid as well, but I don't really remember it. And so when I was watching this, I wasn't comparing it to what's happened before or trying to make it all work in my head, which I think you've just recently watched them, haven't you?
So yeah. I did recently watch the animated 101 Dalmatians, yes.
Mm.
But
and you would have and you'd know more about the other ones too, wouldn't you? You'd have a bit of a
I've seen them.
Yeah.
But I wasn't comparing them in my head. But we know that in 101 Dalmatians, Cruella de Vil wants to kill the animals to make a coat. That's like the basic premise, right? Kill the Dalmatians to make a coat. It is established in this film that she would never kill the dogs. She even says, I wouldn't do that. I would never do that. So you've created empathy for a villain, right? Which is great for an origin story. But that doesn't work as a prequel, which is what you're doing. How does she get from saying, I would never kill the dogs, I would never make a fur coat of them, that's not me, no, I'm a bit crazy, but I'm not that crazy, to wanting to do that?
It's a sequel, Sinead. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, but it doesn't fit. Like, it doesn't...
But also, it could not... Instead of just being a sequel, it might be more of a reimagining. I didn't mind the sort of illusion in the film that she, like the press, sort of ran with the story that she had killed the dogs for a coat and that she was this awful criminal and she maybe sort of went along with it just for the buzz.
I get that, but she literally says, I would never do that, and then we know that that's what she tries to do in the future.
Well, maybe she hates them after a while. I know she... Yeah, I think there is potential there for the sequel to go more into that territory. But I understand what you mean.
I just feel like the whole film's worked to make her empathetic, to make me feel sorry for her, but then
without having... By shortchanging who she is as a character.
Yeah, and without having any... Like, I felt like this with the Star Wars movies, with Solo, with Rogue One, whatever. They're all well and good, but we have an end goal, guys. Like, we all know where we're heading. We know that Star Wars happened, so you have to at least line up your end to fit that somehow.
Mm.
And I don't like it when filmmakers or directors, cough Taika Waititi, cough whoever did Last Jedi, think that they can make a film that doesn't fit anything else.
Mm.
You're working within a franchise already, within an IP, with the constraints of an IP. If you don't want that, don't make the film.
Mm.
The creativity here is how you get to that point in an interesting way, because we already know the end goal, right? We know what's going to happen. So how do you take us on this journey before then to get us there in the most interesting way?
I was just thinking it'd be kind of funny if they made like a Thanos prequel and all throughout it he is like, yeah, I would never actually
snap my fingers. I would never kill anyone.
I would never kill half the universe.
I would never do that. Exactly. But we know that he gets there, right? So...
Yeah, and you're right. And if the journey is still going to happen in the sequel, it's like, well, why give us this movie? Give us that story. Yeah, that's a fair enough comment. Yeah. The film in and of itself, though, I think works.
I like the film. Okay, yeah. I'm going a bit hard, but I did like the film. It was very enjoyable to watch. Emma Thompson, fantastic as always, gave Miranda Priestley a run for her money in terms of, like, boss lady, mean boss lady. That's from Devil Wears Prada. I'm thinking that your silence means that you didn't get that good reference.
All I know is that Meryl Streep's in it and she's mean.
Okay. Well, I'm saying that Emma Thompson is on par, if not better than that.
I got the allusions to that.
Good,
for sure.
good. I love Wink. I love Wink so much. Wink is the best boy or girl in the history of the world.
What did you think about when you said... Wink, I'm going to give you the biggest kiss on the mouth. I don't care where you've been.
Yes, correct response.
I thought that when I saw Wink in the first place. So,
I'm also in this film. I don't know if you know.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm Artie.
Okay.
Who says things like, small point, aren't you dead? And when the other, when Horace says he had the baddies, Artie goes, did you though?
Yeah.
It's me.
You're the lottery police.
It's me.
Yep, that was good. I loved Artie. I wish there was a bit more of Artie, to be honest.
Yeah, I wanted more of Artie too.
He was a little bit set up just to be like functional rather than be character, but I guess all characters are functional in these films. So yeah, you know what I mean, right? I think I liked it as well. I thought I liked the whole vibe. I liked how dark it was, as I said. It's not for kids, you know. Not for little kids. And I actually, by chance, I happened to listen to an interview with the writer of the film, because a friend of mine, Julian, he suggested I listen to the Script Notes podcast, because there was an interview with the writer and creator of WandaVision. Mm. And so I was like, I'll give that a go, like WandaVision. And before that, they interviewed with the person who just happened to write Cruella. I was like, oh, it's lined up nicely. And she said one of the things that's been complaining, that's been annoying her, and people have been complaining a little bit to her, it's like, who's it for? Is it for adults? Is it for kids? Because it's kind of not really very kid-like. It's kind of a bit too kiddy for adults, that sort of thing. And apparently she hates that sort of argument or that sort of concern, because she's like, well, adults like to be kids again, and kids like having something to look to, reach up to. And I like that when I was a kid, to watch something that I thought was a little bit more adult than I was perhaps when I was younger. But having said that, I wouldn't take a six-year-old to this, maybe a 10 up, you know, not that I'm a noted child development psychologist or anything, but you know what I mean? It's not very kid-like. You still there? I'm just talking lots now.
No, I'm here listening.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
One thing I'll say though, too much music, maybe, like songs. What do you think of that?
I liked it. I think it worked.
I just thought it may be a bit overwhelming, having every now and then, like every 5 minutes, there was a new song. And the songs were just a bit basic bitch as well, perhaps.
Yeah.
It's like she's...
I think that is this movie, though. Like, it's very...
Yeah, true.
Generic girl power sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, it's like she's going to make up... She's made up her mind to fight back, and so we're going to play these Boots Made for Walking. And then at the end, it's Sympathy for the Devil. Like, yeah, it's like... It reminds me, actually, very recently, I was listening to ABC Radio in the morning.
Mm. As wow, I was driving. The lives that you lead. ABC AM radio on the way
there's
to
a
work.
Point to the story, okay? Okay, local radio.
Yeah.
And they do this thing for radio DJ, and they have like a theme, and they ask someone to ring up and like, you know, try and suggest a song based on this theme. And the theme, I'm pretty sure it was Gold, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the theme. And a person rang up and they asked for the song Gold by Spandau Ballet. Like, what's going through your mind?
What?
They asked people, our theme today is Gold. Can people suggest a song that we could play based on this theme? And a person rang up and suggested they play the song Gold. I don't get that. I mean, it's broken my brain.
It's not wrong.
It's not wrong. It's just like, well, yeah, obviously that's a song they could have played. And that kind of reminds me, like in this movie, it's like, she is an evil character. Her last name is Deville. Let's play Sympathy for the Devil. It's not even clever. It's obvious, just obvious.
Yeah.
You know.
Talking about Deville, this yes. movie has the second worst etymology behind a character's name after Han Solo, so named because his name was Han and he was on his own.
Oh, my God.
So the person goes... Solo. Do you remember that moment? We laughed in the cinema at that, at how awful that was.
There was no turning back from that movie after that moment for me.
There really wasn't.
Yeah.
And this one has a pretty similar thing. It's like Horace has a car and it's like, it's a devil. And then Jasper's like, it's pronounced Deville. And the camera turns to Cruella and she goes, Deville. I like that. It's like, oh, God.
Horrible. At the same time, though, that wasn't good. But the idea behind her being like Cruella was what her mum said when she was being mean as a play on her name being Estella. I thought that was actually handled quite well.
That's fine, but then you undercut all that hard work by going, Deville. Like, stop. No, stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
Again, they sidestep this, but you wouldn't know it based off Twitter, the idea of that she hates Dalmatians because her mum was killed by Dalmatians. That was so weird. I don't know. It must have been Lon Harris, I think, on Twitter.
It was, yeah.
Tweet about this. He was like, oh, so we can just play clips of movies now. There's no...
We can just spoil them
sense
now.
Of spoilers. We can just watch them. Okay, that's... If that's what we're doing, that changes everything because that is not how the world has worked for the last, 100 years of, of films. I thought that was so bad people did that. And it's not even accurate because that's not why she hates Dalmatians. As you said, she doesn't mind Dalmatians. Also, she was murdered... Her mum was murdered by Emma Thompson. It wasn't actually... The dogs just came out of nowhere and killed them.
Yeah. And then they listen to her in the end. That's the big, thing is that they stop.
Because
she gets the whistle.
Exactly, yeah.
So, what?
It is very weird to decontextualize a plot point and make fun of it, and everyone makes fun of it when it's not even accurate. You could take any scene from a movie, like a two-minute scene out of a movie, and even that, 30 seconds, and say it's stupid without knowing anything about it. It's just very weird to me, all that.
Yeah, well,
it's funny, I guess, but still.
Speaking about the Dalmatians,
I
really hated the CGI. And it's annoying because, Dalmatians are beautiful. All dogs are beautiful. All cats are beautiful. And they're not cruel. And I love them all. So you have to CGI, snarling teeth and drool and, change the shape of their faces. And I'm like, why? Why did we have to do that? Even, the other dogs were the dog that she has in the beginning. Sorry, what's her dog's name? Buddy?
Buddy, I believe.
Yeah. He was CGI at certain parts, when she was rolling out of the car and stuff, it switched from a real dog to a CGI dog, and it was really poor CGI. And I don't know, I just why? You've got a real dog's body and then this really obvious, almost cartoon mouth. Because you can't get a dog to, snarl and be aggressive on command like that, you know? I don't know, yes. I just didn't think it was necessary, and it was just, it didn't work for me.
It was very much... Uncanny Valley with the dogs, wasn't it?
Yes.
They were, on one level, I could appreciate how good the CGI was, but because I was appreciating how good the CGI was, it meant that I recognised it and was taken out of the film for a little bit. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a bit like that one. We didn't ever saw it, but we saw the trailer about, what's his name, Harrison Ford and the dog go through the mountains or something.
Oh, my God, yes.
And the dog is so CGI'd.
Oh, my God. The whole film was around this dog, and the dog's not real.
Yeah,
put a real dog in. Do it Turner and Hooch. Have an actual dog.
Yeah, and I get I like the idea of not using a real dog because there might be a dangerous situation. But yeah, maybe just use CGI to tidy up the edges if it's still not good enough for a whole movie. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like it.
What did you like? The other live-action ones from the 90s, the movies?
The...
101 Dalmatians movies,
I mean. Yeah, I watched a lot. Fun fact, everyone. That movie is the sole reason why my dad hates Glenn Close and also Meryl Streep because he thinks they're the same person, and then I remind him that Meryl Streep didn't play Cruella, and he's like, oh, okay, not her then.
But he still hates her anyway.
I think because he gets confused.
Does he hate her because the character was so evil?
I don't know. I don't actually know. He just always hated Glenn Close because of that movie. The point where he hated Meryl, and I was like, they're not the same person.
Well, I have sympathy with your dad because I saw it as a kid, and because she's so evil, I had similar feelings. It took me a while, grew up a little bit more to realize, oh, yeah, she's not actually evil herself. She's an actor. She's
playing a role.
Yeah. But it did. It had that much of an impact on me that because she was so good at being evil. I think that's probably why I haven't gone back to watch them as an adult because, residual childhood fear of her.
Interesting you say that because rewatching 101 Dalmatians with her in it, I'm still, all those feelings come back of being terrified by her. Even if the evil queen in Snow White that I was rewatching, I was like, oh, God, she's going to appear at the window. Oh, my God. It's so hard to not be taken back to.
Oh, yeah.
It's those memories that formed when you were so little,
I agree.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Having said that, though, watching this one, Cruella's sexy. So I'm conflicted, Sinead.
Oh.
I'm scared, but now she's sexy. What do I do?
Be afraid. Have that fear sexiness. Isn't that a thing? I don't know.
You can tell them the story, Sinead. Help me. But I don't mean to objectify anyone, but the costuming and her performance, Emma Stone's performance, that's something else, right? Like,
yeah, we've completely like not spoken about how great Emma Stone is in this film.
Yeah.
Her accent, flawless, mm-hmm. Perfect. Not a single line, not in character. She perfectly cast. Doesn't sell the dramatic moments for me, except for that last bit at the fountain. She did really well, but she's so good. And you can tell she's having fun as well. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Both she and Emma Thompson are, their overacting is not fair to them, what they're doing, but they're playing the parts of Disney villains, yes. Which is what they're doing. And that's totally fine, but they're doing it so well. You don't really mind. It's you hate them or you hate Emma Thompson. I never thought I'd hate Emma Thompson as a character, as an actor.
I still really didn't. I'm like, she might have a good reason, you know? She might have a good reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw a comment online. It was quite interesting. You know, we're in spoiled territory, so I'm happy to say it. Normally, it's the evil stepmom who hates the children and whatever. In this one, it's the actual mum who wants the kid to be killed.
Yeah.
That's a nice twist on that sort of storyline, isn't it?
Well, interesting you say this. Because I thought the big reveal was going to be that she was Mark Strong's kid.
Oh, I'm glad you thought that too, because I thought that's where it was going.
I 100% thought that's where it's going. And with the, when she said, did you see the hair? And he's like, coincidence. I thought that was because he shaved, like he's bald. And in universe, it was because he shaved it because he has this weird like split black and white thing.
Mm.
I thought that was how it was going to make sense.
Mm.
I don't know. I actually think I might have preferred that better than her being Emma Thompson's kid. But I guess it does make sense because they established, like, the sort of mood swing, split personality was very similar and that she had that in common. But, again, it was one of those twists where I couldn't really have worked it out because there was no hint that Emma Thompson had ever been pregnant before, except when we find it out and then there's all these flashbacks and she turns and she's got a belly. Like, I don't know, I just felt like... Mm. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, thinking back to that first scene, though, like Mark Strong's there at the birth, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. I totally get that. I'm just like...
Yeah.
I thought that's where we're heading and then we took a sort of...
Yeah, worth the rewatch to see if it does make sense in the universe, I think, yeah. We should talk about... Like, they were great. You couldn't fault them. The clothing and costuming, like, it's a bit much to say it's good because obviously it's going to be good. It's a Disney film and it's about fashion. It has to be good, but it is good.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about some of the other actors. I thought Joel Fry as Jasper was kind of the emotional heart, in a way, of the film. And the same with Paul Walter Hauser, who I've always liked, everything I've seen him in. Well, his Cockney accent maybe isn't the strongest.
Oh, his isn't, but
I was supposed to be.
I thought it was interesting. They sort of hinted at a love story between Jasper and Cruella. Did you pick up on that? Or was that just me reading into it?
No, I did that. And our friend Erica, who I saw the film with, also picked up on that.
Yeah. I thought that was nice to have a little, I don't know, in the animated film, they're just like goons essentially. Mm. But to actually have a relationship with them and to have known them for a long time and grow up together was an interesting take on it.
Yeah. I thought Mel might have been stronger if they pushed that a bit. Maybe he did leave. He kind of seemed very, he's like, I'm going to leave you. And then he's like, no, you're not. And you're like, oh, I'm not, I guess.
Oh, damn. Yeah. But he couldn't because he loved her, you know. He wanted to be there for her even if he didn't agree with what she was doing.
Mm.
I'm happy. Sorry, you go.
I was just going to say, it's not that uncommon for someone to love someone else and see them going down a path and to want to stay there and help them rather than just leave them, because it's easy for us to sit back and just leave them, but, you know.
Yeah, that's not in how it works in real life. Yeah. I'm going to make a really bold claim about one of the actors and about acting in general.
Okay.
So just prepare yourself. I'm going to go hard.
I'm sitting down, all right.
I think acting is one of the only professions where you can do a really shit job and still get hired.
Who are you talking about?
Who do you think I'm talking about?
Is it Miss Darling?
Yes.
Kirby Howell Baptiste, is that the one you're talking about?
It is. Do you know why I'm talking about her?
Go on.
In The Good Place. Her Australian accent is laughable. It's terrible. It's not even British. It's not even Kiwi. It's nothing.
Mm.
It's nothing. It's the worst accent anyone has ever done in the history of the universe. People were rightly criticizing her. Then the creators came out in defense of her. She cannot do an Australian accent. She did a really bad job on that show. But then she gets this role. And I feel like if I was a surgeon and I accidentally cut someone's hand off, I probably wouldn't be able to go be a surgeon again. Or if I was a farmer and I sold a bunch of tomatoes that had caterpillars in them, people might not buy my tomatoes again. But in acting, you do a shit accent on a film and they're like, oh, you can have this really high-profile role in a movie with Emma Stone and Emma Thompson. Sure, why not? Off you go. Continue on your career.
Okay.
Actors are in bad movies all the time and they still get hired. There's no repercussions. The only repercussions are like if you were a young female actress in like the early 2000s and you didn't do what Harvey Weinstein wanted you to do and he ruined your career, like Megan Fox or someone like that, you know? But for just doing a bad job on a film, being a bad actor, no, there's none.
Is it possible you're taking some of your feelings about the later seasons of The Good Place out on Kirby?
Yes, it is possible. But that's not what I'm doing.
Okay.
I don't like her act. She's terrible. See, you know she was terrible in it because we watched it together and you're like, oh, go away, Simone. No one cares about Simone. No one cares about the love story between Chidi and Simone. No one cares. Make her go away.
At the same time, though, isn't she quite good in Barry?
She's fine, I guess.
Mm. I know what you mean, though. When the accent is particularly egregious to us Australians.
They couldn't even get a dialect coach for her. Like, that's a pretty standard thing on a film set.
Yeah, but having said that, again, isn't she pretty good in this film?
She's great in this film.
Okay.
I'm just saying that her career seemingly hasn't been
impervious
to her terrible performance.
Well, maybe that's because Americans don't know what we sound like, so they didn't mind when she was so bad at the accent.
Potentially. I don't know.
But you're right. It's a different standard, isn't it? And maybe you can pass it off as an acting choice or something. Blame the director when you're doing a bad accent. But yes, it was grating for us, wasn't it?
And then the setup that they're going to be the Anita and what's his name?
Roger.
With Perdita and Pongo.
Mm. Yeah, so again, that was probably something that if I had a bit more up-to-date knowledge of the original films, I would have known why Roger was getting so much screen time, because I was like, this guy's done nothing. He just left halfway through.
Like, didn't you get it when they're like, he plays piano?
No.
Okay.
But I liked him because Kevan Novak is one of the vampires in the TV version of What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, okay.
So I liked him. And yeah, I saw someone quote this that I didn't realize until afterwards. And they were like, one of the things that he says in What We Do in the Shadows is, this fucking guy. He said it about him. He's like, he worked out he was in the film. This fucking guy. Anyway. But in the movies, is he a piano, is he a songwriter in the original movies?
He writes the Cruella de Vil song. Do you not? Lonnie, where have you been? That's the whole point of the opening of the movie. There's Roger and Pongo and there's Anita and Perdita, right? And then they meet and then they form a little family and they have some babies. And the whole point is that Cruella's coming over and he's writing the song because he's a songwriter and he writes Cruella de Vil. Like, that's the song that he writes. Honestly.
Okay. Well, blame Glenn Close / Meryl Streep, okay?
Can I talk about one moment that I loved in this film and that actually really surprised me and worked really well? It's when... So there's like a tit-for-tat thing going on between Cruella and Emma Thompson's character, whose name I can't remember at the moment.
Baroness.
With the fashion stuff, right? And Cruella's trying to, well, Estella at that point is trying to prove herself. When the dresses get locked in the safe and they open it and the beads from the dress were moth's eggs.
Yeah.
Totally took me by surprise. Loved that. I literally like gasped and went, oh, that's so cool. Like, what a cool thing to do. Like, it really subverted expectations. I didn't see it coming. They set it up a tiny bit where I was like, gee, they look a bit like cocoons, but no, mustn't be because it's a bead thing. I just think that worked really well. And a lot of the sort of stunts that they pull, like when Cruella falls out of the garbage truck and her dress is made out of rags and they like unravel as they drive away, like so cool to the people who thought of those stunts and like how to frame them.
And even I agree with you, those two bits were so clever. And you know, it took some time and intelligence to think up those moments. You know, weren't necessarily things you just think of on the day or something. Like, lots of effort put in. I appreciate that.
They felt really well written and well edited. And
And it's a bit like some shows you watch where it's like, this person, she's the new up-and-coming designer and it's just it's a dress. It's a regular dress she's designed, you know. At least in this film, you could see how it does make a bit of a media storm where she does those things where it's clever. You can kind of see why she's getting all this attention. Just the very simple one, though, is when, I think one of the earlier ones where she comes out and she's in one of her costumes and she's got the projector on her face that says the future.
Oh, yeah.
That was just really, just like a small moment, which I thought was quite interesting.
It's really cool, like high fashion sort of graphic performance art sort of stuff.
Yeah. Kind of reminded me actually of one of the storylines in Emily in Paris.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it was coming and I almost said it and then I went, no, don't, because he'll jump on that. And I didn't. You're talking about where they throw the paint on her?
Yeah, it actually makes sense to me to raise this one, actually.
Actually, you know what? I'll give you this. It is relevant to what we're talking about, at least.
Because there was a plot point where they had two warring fashion designers and Emily is being the design, like the marketing for one of them. And she gets thrown the paint over her dress and then she becomes,
she's in the middle of it all. For some reason, because that's what our marketing executives do, is turn into models and then she gets paint. Poured all over the dress and
And there's two sort of younger artists / designers who are coming up against the older guys who she's trying to represent. And I'm not saying they copied Emily in Paris, but it's possible that there are some allusions there, you know?
How long was this film in the works for?
It's like 2013 apparently.
Yeah, so I don't know that there's a lot of inspiration we're getting from Emily in Paris, but probably not, though. Hey.
Maybe. Well, possibly.
No.
Okay. And did you watch this on Disney Plus tonight?
I did not. I took exception to the fact that it was going to cost me $45 to watch it on Disney Plus, and found a cheap ticket right when cinemas were opening again so I could get in and get out.
Were you like banging on the door? Let me in.
Please. This is all I want. That's me.
Yeah, I was wondering
to pay the Disney fee and they just pay an extra $25 to watch it?
Yeah.
No. You guys are a $1 billion company. You do not need $25 from me. Just let me watch the freaking show. Anyway.
That's fine. I was wondering what the experience would have been like watching it at home. It's very different to watching it at the cinema.
I think there's a dissertation in that if anyone's like doing their PhD on the cinema experience versus the at-home rental system.
Well, yeah, I remember lectures at uni of like one particular. It was like, when I go to see a film at the cinema, I put everything away, I focus, I'm there to watch it. I'm there to go out with friends afterwards and have dinner and talk about it and get into really, you know, get stuck into it. If I'm at home, I'll stop it. I'll be on my phone. I'm not going to watch it properly. So if someone rings, like, if I get a message, I'll look at the message. Like, so of course you're not watching it in the same context. And I think that's probably why people thought they could share the video on Twitter, because
everyone's already seen it. It's available at home. So if you haven't seen it, it's your fault, that kind of thing.
And like, if it's on your phone, it's content. But like, if someone went to the cinema and filmed that and then distributed it,
that's illegal.
That's illegal. Yeah. But it's on your phone already. It's just like everything else I watch, I can share. Yeah. Interesting concept.
I think that's also like, traditionally, culturally, we'd get dressed up to go to the theatre and it would be like a special sort of outing. And I don't get dressed up to go to the theatre, but I'm, you know, I'm not in tracksuit pants and a pyjama top. And I wonder if that's part of it too, is the way that we frame the experience going into it, as in, this is a special thing that we've paid money for, this experience. I'm going to sit down and have this experience. And this experience is dinner and then a movie and all of that. As opposed to, oh, what do you want to watch? It's Tuesday night and 7 o'clock. Let's just chuck on Cruella sort of thing, you know. I really do think that the way that we watch a film, it really influences how we feel about it. I'm a huge believer in that.
I think that's so true. But I agree that the idea of going to the movies is something that, you know, one of our favourite things to do, and we always... We try to make it a thing as well, don't we? We go for dinner and we talk about it, and it's like, you know, it's fun. It's a date and stuff. Having said that, if you're a, you know, got four kids, and you're a single parent, it'd be so good to just be able to chuck on the new movie and watch it yourself for not much money comparatively, because you and I go to the cinema, we can get a cheap ticket normally. We go on the right night and we can go to a later session if you want. But if you don't have all those considerations, if you're
privileges as well.
Yeah, it totally is. So, yeah, so there's a bit of a push-pull there, and there are good parts and bad parts. But anyway, Cruella, I recommend it. I'm going to give it 4 stars. Yeah. What do you reckon? A bit long, maybe. One other thing I didn't mention, a bit long.
Quite long. I'm torn between 3.5 and 4, so I'm going to go 3.75.
Okay. Why are you torn?
Well, 3.5 sounds really low. When I really did like certain parts of it. But then 4 stars seems a bit too high for the issues that I had with the drama stuff not working and the bad CGI. Yeah, I don't know. Also, can I just talk to you about my cinema experience quickly? The gentleman in the seat in front of me put his hands like behind his head and reclined. So his like elbows were covering the screen.
Really?
You don't do that, do you? You don't sit like that in the cinema.
No.
Like, that's not what you do. And also at the end, when Cruella gets pushed off the cliff and she's got parachute on her, which we all could have seen happening, right? Like, obviously she's going to get pushed off the cliff and be fine, because we know that there's another movie. She's not going to die. This woman next to me, like at the next aisle thing, went, oh my goodness, when it turned out that she had a parachute. It's like, sorry, is this the first movie you've ever seen in the history of the world? Like, that moment was so obvious that it was coming, and it was fine. It was done well. But, like, wasn't that shocking, was it? Like, you know she doesn't die. You know this is a prequel, right?
Yeah, that's funny, yes.
Maybe I should have watched it at home. Maybe I would have had a better experience. weekends.
Well,
no annoying people at home.
I know. As much as we love going to the cinema as an experience, you do run that risk, don't you, of people.
You really do.
Before we go, I should also comment that Erica, our good friend and sometimes guest,
mm-hmm.
We've been talking about this. We went to see it together. We're talking a lot about how it's like the female Joker. And then we've been talking, like, giving it different names, like Le Feminine Joker, El Joker, Jokerette.
That's good.
So that's been fun for us.
No, oh, nice. Thanks for letting us in on that little in-joke.
But then we kind of got a bit disappointed because she didn't go full Joker, really.
Nah.
But maybe she
That will. Was like, well, she has to eventually because that's what happens. Like, again, back to my thing, establishing empathy for a villain is fine, but when you're making a prequel, you've got to get back to just true evil villain. Like, yeah, this is funny. The problem. You're turning two-dimensional characters into three-dimensional characters. Like, I don't know that it works. But anyway, yeah.
I was going to say, it'd be funny if in the sequel to Cruella 2, whatever it is, they, like, she gets a boyfriend or something, or like someone has a kid or something, and that person is killed by the dogs, and that's why she hates dogs after that.
Just everyone in her life slowly gets killed by Dalmatians.
Yeah, and then she's like, oh, I do hate the dogs now, I will kill them, that's why.
Well, they're going to have to do something stupid like that to get her back to where she needs to be.
It'd just be funny to take the thing that everyone made fun of about her and then just to make it actually the plot for the next one be funny.
Do you think Cruella 2 should be just called Tuella?
Oh, that'd be good, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Like Ratatouille.
Even well, it's not a sequel. No. Weird.
Good though. Sense. Good. I don't like when Pixar do sequels. I think
no.
It ruins the integrity of the original film.
Absolutely. A wonderful thing ago. Sorry.
That's fine.
I know we're wrapping up, but I thought the show in Regent's Park was really good. Like the rock show they did. That was really cool. Just mentioning that out of nowhere. But also I mentioned before how like they made Cruella sexy in this film. Mm-hmm. Like that, you know, that's fine. That's a choice and whatever. It's a movie star. Of course they're going to be sexy. I was thinking about what they might do for like Hunchback of Notre Dame where they put like Andrew Scott as the guy maybe. As Frollo. Is it Frollo the guy? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean.
I wouldn't mind that. I mean.
I know you wouldn't. You wouldn't mind that.
He's just going to break my heart though. So what's the point?
Yeah. This is like, other famous Disney villains, they should make them all. I guess they did. I know it wasn't Disney, but they did. Like, it wasn't Captain Hook, was he? He was, but Hugh Jackman was in a Peter Pan movie. Like, it's an option, but it is weird to make them. Yes, the sexiness was part of her character. Wasn't just that she happened to be an attractive actor to play Cruella. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think Cruella the character has always been very glamorous. You know, she's fur coats and has the cigarette on the cigarette holder, and like that's part of her character.
Yeah,
I think it's
But yeah, it'd be interesting to apply that to other villains if they do this in the future.
I guess like Angelina playing Maleficent was like that too.
Yeah,
but Maleficent was very, like Maleficent was conventionally attractive.
Yeah. I guess so.
Interesting.
Anyway, I'd like to see a sexy Andrew Scott Frollo as well.
I probably would see that live action just because I love that movie so much, but you know.
Yeah. Anyway, wrapping up.
Yep.
See you later.
Bye.
Thank you very much for listening, and also we're on all the socials, get in touch with us, and tell your friends if you like our podcast. Thank you.
That'd be great.
Alright, see you later. Oh,
God. No.
Cool, blimey.
No. Are you done?
I'm done.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.